Hi, I'm Trevor, and welcome to Catching Up on Cinema. If you aren't familiar with the program, Catching Up on Cinema is a film analysis podcast wherein we introduce each other to films, expand our cinematic horizons, and, in essence, catch up on our cinema. So it is the month of May 2024, and we are in the midst of our summer camp edition of the podcast. Now, you may have noticed Kyle's voice is absent from the program this week. He's got some real-life shit going on, some home improvement, I believe. So it is just going to be you and I here alone today. We're going to get all intimate and shit. So today, I'm going to be doing a solo review of my pick this month, perhaps my only pick this month. Kyle was pretty excited for some of the other picks we had going this, like, planned this month. So my one summer camp movie that I knew right from the start, I absolutely had to talk about this month, is going to be Heavyweights, Disney's Heavyweights from 1995, directed by Stephen Brill. Now, last week we talked about Camp Nowhere, which was a Buena Vista kid power summer camp film. That was one of Kyle's picks, and was kind of like a beloved childhood favorite of his growing up. And funny enough, it was one that I did not see until last week. It was a legit catching up on cinema experience for me. I caught up on Camp Nowhere. This week, however, I did say the pick was to me. And in the case of Heavyweights, this is one that I know very well. This is one that I saw probably in 1995. And I've kind of loved my entire life. It is one of my favorite live action Disney movies in a lot of respects. It's right up there with, I guess, what, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which was another very early childhood favorite of mine. Yes, that was a Disney film. But Heavyweights is kind of a funny one because, in case you didn't know, it is, in fact, about a fat camp wherein overweight children are sent with the expectation to lose weight. That subject matter in 2024 alone is probably somewhat politically charged. I have to imagine there's quite a lot of folks out there that take offense to the very concept of that. I mean, it doesn't sound great to me on paper either. But I feel like I should, much like the case of me, like talking about like a well-established, like, pop culture property, like, say, like a Star Wars or an Indiana Jones or like a Batman or something. Like, I don't know if you, dear listener, have ever had this experience, but have you ever walked into one of those discussions where you feel the need to list your bona fides, where it's like, yeah, I have credentials, bitch. Like I come into this discussion with facts, with straight facts and experience backing my opinions. So full disclosure, I'll just toss it out there. I was a fat kid. So if I say things that are unseemly or offensive to you when it comes to like the sizes of some of these young boys and the way that they talk shit about each other in the film, that's my bona fide. I was one of these kids in 1995. I was a fat fuck in 1995. When I hear some of the weights listed off during like some of the weigh-in sequences in this film, I'm like, shit, yeah, I was about there, yeah. I mean, I'm naturally not a very big person. I come from small stock, as it is, on both sides of the family. So I never hit, like, 200 or anything. But I did get up into the upper 180s, like, in my early teens. So I was a big dude. I was a heavy kid. And part of the reason why I'm telling you this, dear listeners, is that... I guess I'm reinforcing the fact that it's like, even in the midst of that, even in the midst of occasionally being teased about that fact, like in regards to myself, I still really liked this movie. Like I didn't, like, maybe I lacked self-awareness or whatever, but like in watching this movie in 1995, I thought it was hilarious. I didn't take offense even in the slightest. I thought it was funny. I laughed along with it. And for what it's worth, I continue to this day. So there it is. Anyway, I don't plan on having this be a super detailed episode. It would have been fun to talk to Kyle about this one just because clearly I have an attachment to it. I have an affinity for it. But Kyle has often told me that's not quite the case with himself. He doesn't have a problem with it. It's just like when you compare it to Camp Nowhere, he has a very clear preference. And if I'm looking at it, if I'm putting both of them under a magnifying glass, I tend to agree that Camp Nowhere did surprise me with its cleverness. It is a more clever, more well-structured script. This one, in terms of structure especially, is kind of flimsy. Like the final act of the thing just doesn't, it just kind of fizzles out. Like, it doesn't quite know what it's supposed to do other than end as most generic summer camp movies may. Or actually, it just turns into like a straight like sports film by the time you get to the end of it, even though almost none of the film was building to that. But I think the comedy is there. I think the entertainment value is there. I think the performances are there. So I do think it stands up to Camp Nowhere. I prefer it, but I do concede that Camp Nowhere has some strengths that Heavyweights does not. So, as I mentioned, Heavyweights from 1995 is directed by Stephen Brill, who is by no means like a household name, not even to myself. However, I'll just toss out there, he has worked with the Disney Corporation many times. In fact, he wrote the first three Mighty Ducks films. I actually don't know if that series continued beyond that. I do know that they made like a Disney Plus show or something that, near as I can tell, nobody fucking watched. Certainly not myself. I barely watched D3: The Mighty Ducks. I think I watched like half of it at school or something. We had a substitute, I'm sure. The first two Mighty Ducks I love. Second one especially, I remember seeing that a lot at like friends' houses and stuff. And funny enough, this movie shares quite a few cast members, especially the child actors from the Mighty Ducks series. So Stephen Brill is responsible for writing those films. He also wrote Ready to Rumble, which, if you're not aware, is the WCW comedy film from the year 2000. The same year, he also wrote and directed Little Nicky, which I know is a divisive Sandler film. I happen to like it. On that same note, he also directed Hubie Halloween, which is the Netflix Adam Sandler film from 2020, so a few years ago. I did not see that one. However, I've actually heard decent things about it. Sounds like he and Adam Sandler kind of get each other. And just based on some of the familiar faces featured in this film and sprinkled across Stephen Brill's filmography, it's my suspicion that he probably deals in very similar circles to Adam Sandler. For instance, the cameraman, Kenny the cameraman in this film, is played by Alan Covert, a.k.a. Adam Sandler's goofy friend in most of his films in the 90s and 2000s. I don't know if they continue that creative partnership, but just his presence, it's like, oh, okay. And, you know, Ben Stiller, I'm sure, has been in some parties with Adam Sandler here and there. I'm sure that these are all people who are familiar with each other. Moving on, though, I will note that Judd Apatow is listed as another writer for this film. This was, I think, one of his earliest gigs, perhaps his first film writing gig. Kind of a big deal for him. Obviously, he would go on to have, you know, an illustrious career through the 2000s. I don't know what he's up to these days, but he did seem to like kind of fizzle out a little bit. Like, he was the guy there when it came to comedies. He was like the Farrelly Brothers of the 2000s, like Farrelly Brothers 90s, 2000 or mid 2000s, I guess, Judd Apatow. So he's listed as a writer. So we have some talent there, I guess. Like, say what you will. And let's move on to the cast. So we have Aaron Schwartz, who plays Jerry, Gerald Garner, age 11 or age 12, I can't remember. He's essentially hero protagonist in this film. He's the character we're first introduced to. He's the kind of the standby character for most of the proceedings. I don't really know this kid outside of this and the Mighty Ducks films. He had a smaller role in those ones. In fact, I don't even know if he was in the second one, if memory serves. We also have Ben Stiller and his parents, both of them. We have Ben Stiller as Tony Perkis Jr. and Sr. He's doing a dual role. This is obviously a thing that Ben Stiller has done throughout much of his filmography. The Cable Guy, for instance, came out around this time, He directed that film, and he's featured in the televised court proceedings, like the running gag throughout that entire film. He plays the twin brothers in that, and he does it great. He's a chameleon. Ben Stiller's always kind of had that as one of his major tools in his toolkit. Man, I'll tell you, him as Tony Perkis Sr. is only on screen as that character for like a half minute, maybe a minute, but he nails it. Like, he really does. I love his one scene as Tony Perkis Sr. I like Ben Stiller. I really, really love him as a director. As an actor, I think he's very talented. I think he's got great comedic chops. But to me, where he really shines is his directing. I really enjoy his films that he directs. It's not something he does super commonly. Like, he doesn't have that many films that he's directed. But I do tend to really like a lot of them. Reality Bites, I know, has a not so great reputation. It hasn't stood the test of time, is I guess what I'm saying. I did mention The Cable Guy, however, and I adore that film. I love The Cable Guy, and that came out the very next year. Zoolander is, of course, a lot of fun. Tropic Thunder is one that I really need to re-see because my girlfriend's brother and a couple of my old friends from high school, like people that I'm still in contact with today, they're successful. They're not losers. They're not bums. just throwing that out there. These not bum friends of mine, they really, really, really love Tropic Thunder. A lot of people do, but it's been so long since I've seen it. I don't remember it especially well, but that's one that he gets a lot of credit for. I've always kind of thought of him in a similar sense to like Danny DeVito. To me, they have similar sensibilities and similar, like, even like from an aesthetic standpoint, they have kind of similar sensibilities. Like, it's a flimsy comparison, but it is one that I tend to make. I will put out there that this is something that's kind of like common knowledge at this point, but the Tony Perkis character is essentially the prototype for White Goodman, or White Goodman, the villain from Dodgeball, a film that Ben Stiller has numerous credits for, not direction as far as I know. Very similar characterization. It's up in the air as to which performance he did a little bit better, but I really love his Tony Perkis Jr. and Sr. in this. And also, we have a host of cameos, but I'll get to them in a second as I work my way through the main cast here. A really big one is, what's his face? Tom McGowan, who plays Pat. He's the main camp counselor at Camp Hope, where the main story takes place. He's a very warm presence in the film. He has great energy, like, as this type of character, is a very positive, very supportive, very funny, very affable character. He's great with the kids. He has great chemistry with the kids. I know Tom McGowan mostly from Frasier. He had a lot of appearances on that show. I think he was like one of the producers or something on the radio program in that show. And also, just in case Kyle's listening to this one, he probably isn't, but I'll just toss it out there. Apparently, Tom McGowan has a credit as a character named Harry Radman in The Birdcage from 1996, the very next year. The reason I toss that out there is because Kyle really loves that movie. He's a big fan of The Birdcage. I'm surprised we haven't talked about it, honestly. That's one I haven't seen in a long time, but I do know that Kyle's a fan. Moving on, though, Kenan Thompson is another major element of the child side of the cast. He was, of course, in D2, The Mighty Ducks. Knuckle Puck, baby. Kenan Thompson is, you know, one of the more successful child actors, like in the creative, in the artistic sense, I guess, that I grew up watching. Like, to see him go from Mighty Ducks 2 and all that to, you know, being a consistent player on the Saturday Night Live cast and like one of the more funny members of that cast. He's living the dream. He's been doing great as far as I can tell. And that's encouraging. That's good to know. I did mention that Ben Stiller's parents are both in the film, by the way. Jerry Stiller, a.k.a. the funniest fucking man that ever lived. Unfortunately, he has passed away as of not too long ago, only a few years if memory serves. And Mira also has passed away. So both his mother and father, Ben Stiller's mother and father, have passed. But if you ask me, Jerry Stiller is like one of the funniest fucking people that has ever walked this earth, at least that I've borne witness to. Because be it King of Queens or Seinfeld or this or many other Ben Stiller films in smaller roles, Jerry delivers. Jerry Stiller fucking delivers. Something about his demeanor and his delivery is utterly his own. And he knows how to do that Chris Farley step on the gas thing where he goes from down here to up here and you never quite know when it's going to happen. It's always just a little bit off rhythm. It's thoroughly disarming, but goddamn, I love Jerry Stiller. And Ann Mira's no slouch either. The two of them are a classic comedic duo, husband and wife comedic duo, well known. And yeah, they unfortunately are not in this very much. They have like one scene. Thankfully, Jerry Stiller does get in at least a couple of good lines, like watching him try to fight back tears. That's how you can tell you're just naturally really fucking funny, is like you're holding back pain. You're like holding back tears. That's the performance you're being asked to give. And yet I'm laughing at you the whole time. Like, he can't help but be funny. He can't help but put some English on that. Yeah, don't let anybody sign your checks is his line, by the way, as that's his advice to the youngsters out there. But yeah, I just figured I'd mention both of Ben Stiller's parents are in this movie. I think that's really sweet, even though their screen time is very limited. Back to the kids, Sean Weiss, who is not dead. Speaking of the King of Queens, I'm pretty sure he was on an episode of that where he like went out on a date with Leah Remini. I could be wrong on that. I'm speaking directly out my ass. I'm refusing to look it up. Maybe somebody someday is going to leave a comment. Now would be the time to correct me on this. Was it Donkey Lips or was it Sean Weiss? It was one of those kids. It was one of those husky boys. Sean Weiss, who is not dead, apparently recently did an appearance on the Movie Dumpster podcast, who have a YouTube channel as well. I did not watch that. However, I did listen to their podcast on the film, on Heavyweights. And they did like a live screening event where they invited him, Sean Weiss himself, to watch along with a live audience, like the film, and then do like a live Q&A. So I actually would like to go back and listen to that or watch that, because that's really cool. Because I bet you there's stories. Like every movie production has stories. And, you know, to hear it from somebody who is, you know, basically a kid on the set would be really, really interesting, especially Sean Weiss, who, you know, had a decent number of pretty high profile child actor credits back in the day. I've been saying his name over and over and over again, as if you know who he is. Goldberg from Mighty Ducks, not the wrestler. I did mention WCW earlier, and I do tend to mention wrestling a lot. Not the WCW Bill Goldberg, but simply Goldberg, the not so great goalie who gets replaced by the girl goalie in Mighty Ducks 2. That child actor, he plays Josh in this film, and he's great. He has some of my favorite lines in the movie. It's funny to say about a kid, but the combination of him wearing a tracksuit, his accent and his delivery, I can't help but see Paul Sorvino. Like, I don't know if he was like channeling Paul Sorvino, maybe even like more specifically like Goodfellas Paul Sorvino or something, but just I see it and I can't not see it, and it makes me fucking laugh, especially when his introduction is him just like sitting in the bunk and Keenan walks up to him, little Keenan, knuckle puck baby, he walks up to him and he's like, hey, Josh, I just saw the new nurse, very attractive. And then Sean Weiss, Josh, he just looks up, looks off into the middle distance and just says, this pleases me, with a satisfied grin on his face. Talk about quotables. There's quite a lot of quotables in this movie. That might be up there as far as like one of my most common quotes from this film. This pleases me. Nobody ever knows that I'm quoting it. It's just something about that, the flatness of that delivery. This pleases me. Like, I don't know why it makes me laugh. It just does. But yeah, Sean Weiss, who is most certainly not dead, is in this film. He dips out of the film at like the midway point. I don't know if that was like a scheduling thing, because thanks to that Movie Dumpster podcast, I did hear that I think he was filming Mighty Ducks 3 concurrent to this. So perhaps they had to write him out of the film for a portion of it. Although, if that is the case, they did a bang up job of it, because when he makes his exit, his brief exit before his return in Heavyweights, I love the execution of it, where he insults the Tony Perkis character, the antagonist, and we get a freeze frame followed by like a closing iris of white. And it's like, and then the next shot is like his bunk all folded up and he's gone. It's like he's been whisked away or he's been murdered or something. That freeze frame just works for me. I really loved it. Moving on, though, there's not a whole lot of other notables in the cast. However, I will point out that Gerald Garner, I think Tony Perkis calls him Gardner, even though it's Garner. It's like a running gag in the film. The main character of the film, his dad is played by Jeffrey Tambor, who I believe is now canceled. However, has countless TV and film credits. He's in here. He looks very Dr. Phil-ish. Looks like he's got some Just for Men in his hair. It's looking exceptionally brown, I guess is what I'm saying. Moving on, though, don't need to dwell on that. Tim Blake Nelson also is in like exactly one scene in the opening of this film. That would be the Tim Blake Nelson who's, you know, buddies with the Coen brothers, or Brother, Where Art Thou, and the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Also plays the leader, or the character who will soon become the leader, in The Incredible Hulk. Moving on, though, Judd Apatow apparently has a small role in the film. And also I'll point out that Peter Berg, actor/director Peter Berg, has a cameo in this film as like the camp cook. He just kind of pops up out of nowhere, and it's very surprising. Didn't expect to notice that one. Like, as a kid, I didn't notice that, but that was a big surprise. Anyway, I actually don't feel I'm going to do a full ass review for this one. I have notes, but I think I'd be boring myself and you by trying to go through a comedy laughing at myself the whole time, front to back. So I'll just call a halt to things here and just say that I really enjoy this movie. I think it has a lot of classic moments and a lot of classic lines. It was really fun for me to go back and rewatch. I realize this is kind of a non-review, so I apologize for that if it's not substantive in any real fashion, other than me just saying, like, hey, I went back to it in 2024. I think it holds up mostly. Maybe the subject matter is not especially palatable these days, but to me, I think most of the gags are there. All the adult actors really bring it. Like, you can tell that Ben Stiller is really committed to this character. I will point out that apparently Ben Stiller in real life is pretty committed to like fitness, or at least like heavy cardio at the very least. Like, he's kind of a gym rat in some respect. So he's a good pick for this. He definitely had the right manic energy for the Tony Perkis character, and he really knew what he was trying to execute with the character, and I think it landed. But yeah, this is a childhood favorite of mine. It was a fun rewatch. Maybe check it out if you're interested. It's readily available on Disney Plus. Although I'm pretty sure you have to dig for it, because I seriously doubt that they would proudly put it on like the front page. That doesn't strike me as something that the Disney Corporation would be interested in doing. Anyway, as I said, this is Heavyweights from 1995, directed by Stephen Brill. And of course, written by both he and Judd Apatow. And this was our second episode in our summer camp edition. If you'd like to catch up on any of our other Catching Up on Cinema content, however, you can find all of that on our website of catchinguponcinema.com. You can also find us on the social medias in the form of the Instagram @catchinguponcinema, as well as the Twitter at Catching Cinema. So feel free to hit me up at either of those. That's Twitter/X, by the way. God damn it. I can't believe I have to call it that. And yeah, the podcast is available on pretty much every platform you can imagine, including Bitcade. So fucking Google it. And that being said, thank you so much for listening. Sorry it wasn't especially long or detailed or even much of a review at all. But it is what it is. So anyway, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.